When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark with Charles W. Chuck Bryant and Jerry. And so, this is Stuff You Should Know.
I thought you were about to change the name of the show right there.
No.
On a whim.
No.
No?
No. All right.
That's very meaty and savory of you.
Can you smell my juices? I'm cooking in them.
You smell like fish stock.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, I did a Don't Be Dumb on ketchup, the origin of ketchup.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one.
And it actually... Oh, you saw that?
Sure.
You watched this?
Of course I do.
I had no idea.
I'm your biggest fan.
You're one of the 100.
Well, no, I'm one of those people that's like, this guy's so dumb. What kind of an... I don't get it. I can't get through these.
Why is he acting like that?
But I just keep watching them. I can't help it.
So you saw the one about ketchup and you know about ketchup.
Yes.
The Vietnamese fish sauce that actually serves as the basis for ketchup.
Yes.
The American condiment, which is not the number one selling condiment in America.
Is it salsa?
No.
What is it?
Mayonnaise.
Oh, yes.
Did you know that?
No, well, but I love mayonnaise.
Clearly you didn't. What kind? Dukes is your brand, right?
Well, I'm Dukes, but I find myself a defender of mayonnaise because my whole life people have just thought it was gross. Not everyone.
You would do well in like France or Belgium, buddy.
Yeah, like on a hamburger and a hot dog, people are like, ugh, because I don't like ketchup and people think I'm weird.
Oh no, you need some ketchup too. Not that much. I've also found recently as a grown up adult, a real live one, that like you can replace ketchup with tomatoes and it tastes maybe even better. Depending on the ketchup.
You mean on a burger?
Yes.
Instead of both?
Right.
You just mean no ketchup?
Yeah. You could put in both.
Sugar.
I'm not opposed to it. No, it just, I've found, and it was a big surprise to me, a really big surprise.
Yes.
That if you just put tomatoes, a good tomato on and no ketchup, you're actually creating the taste that you're looking for with ketchup that just misses it slightly.
Right, because it's got more than tomatoes in it.
Right. It's really, again, very surprising to me. Even though I realize, of course, that tomato is made from, or ketchup is made from tomatoes.
Partially, sure.
It's not like I haven't made that connection.
Right.
I just didn't realize how good just tomatoes were on a burger without ketchup.
Yeah, I don't like raw tomatoes either, so I wouldn't do that. And you can't dip a French fry in a tomato.
Well, no, I'm not opposed to ketchup. I'll still use ketchup.
I hear you.
Especially for dipping fries. I'm cool with that.
It's
I'm not
weird.
Down in ketchup here is what I'm trying to say. I just think that tomatoes are great on a burger. But I also like mayo, too, I think is ultimately the point that started me off on this.
Yeah, I like tomato sauce, like red sauce.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like raw tomatoes or just whole tomatoes. They're slimy. Well, I don't know.
You're supposed to eat them like an apple or anything.
If
you've been doing that, I can understand why you don't like raw tomatoes.
Some people do. Some people just slice them and eat them on a plate.
Right. Or not just holding it in your hand and eating it like an apple.
What kind of monster does that?
That's what I'm saying, a monster. Kaiser Wilhelm II.
Yeah, he was known. All right, so all of that to say, umami.
Umami. Oh, mama, this one's about umami.
The fifth flavor.
The fifth beetle.
Out of what they now say is six. Fat.
Carbon dioxide is also one, too.
Oh, really?
Huh? We supposedly, they found receptors that are It's tailored specifically to sensing carbon dioxide on the tongue, and that it ultimately that makes it qualify as a taste.
So they're going to be 7 now?
I think there's way more. I don't know why science has been so stingy or so reluctant to accept the idea that we have more than 4 flavor receptors or more 4 taste receptors. But umami was isolated in the beginning of the 20th century, and it wasn't for almost 80 years before the West finally accepted it.
Yeah, part of the reason is because the research was written in Japanese.
Well, it's okay. That's maybe something to do with it.
And part of the issue was that umami is very mild in taste, and when you have high concentrations of it to increase that flavor, you've got salty and sour mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just confounded the West.
They're like, "What? We get sour.
Yeah.
We get salty. We get sweet for sure. Why we even get bitter, but we don't get this other thing.
Nope.
And we're not going over 5. So you better make this umami stuff good." That's what the West said.
Dumb Western scientists and food scientists.
So, Chuck, I think we let the cat out of the bag a little bit. The Japanese are the ones who first discovered umami.
That's right. It comes from the word umai, roughly translated as delicious. Chefs, if you talk to a chef, umami's a big hot thing right now.
It really is.
They'll say maybe it's like a mushroomy thing. It's like a earthy. It is very subtle, like I said. It's
musty?
Yeah, musty, which doesn't sound appealing.
No, but it also makes sweet different. That's umami's big, great quality. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why it was hard for the West to accept it, is umami's big thing is synergizing.
Yeah, it's a supporting cast member almost.
Yeah, it takes, yes, it is. It's like Bud Bundy.
Okay.
Not a leading guy,
uh-huh.
But you put him in an ensemble, he's going to bring everybody else up. It's what he's known for.
I would give $1 million American to be inside your brain during that 5-ish seconds of you spinning around searching for a supporting cast member and ending up at Bud Bundy.
Well, you come back in 20 years and give me $1 million and I will let you.
Man, that would be amazing.
So, with like salty, sour, we get those things. They stand on their own. Umami actually has a very mild and not necessarily like pleasurable flavor on its own.
Yeah, you don't want something that's like, oh, this is just umami flavored.
Right. But it is almost like it's designed to interact with other flavors, especially salty and especially sweet.
Agreed.
And umami can even interact with itself.
Whoa.
And all of a sudden, it takes what was just like a ho-hum day and turns it into the greatest day of your life with one bite of shiitake mushroom.
With some hot umami on umami action. So it is nothing new, obviously. It's not like you can just identify a new taste. It's been around. The Romans and the Greeks before them enjoyed something called garum, and that is a sauce that, boy, you want to talk about how you find something weird food-wise?
Yeah.
They were gutting fish, and they said, let's take this fish guts and blood, and let's salt it and leave it out in the sun for 3 months.
And see what happens.
And see what happens.
And then you have to eat it. No, you eat it. No, you.
And someone eventually ate it. They strained the liquid from the top of it, and they said, boy, this is garum sauce.
This is good stuff.
It's delicious.
Garum means delicious in ancient Roman.
I think so. And it is, that was umami personified. Because how umami was discovered, in 1907, there was a brilliant chemist named Kikune Akita. Is that right?
Kikune, that A-E.
Uh-huh.
It's got an extra little pop to it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you did it.
Thank you. So he was a chemist, and he worked at the Imperial University. He was a professor at the Imperial University of Tokyo. And he was perplexed that he tasted something one day and said, this is not any of those 4 flavors.
No, no, no.
I know this is different.
He was all about the dashi. Dashi, yes, is the basis of miso soups, lots of other stuff. But basically, it's a fish stock made from, I think, tuna flakes and kombu, which is dried kelp.
Yes, and there are all kinds of recipes for a dashi base, and it's in a lot of things, from sauces and like soba noodle sauces to, like you said, miso.
Yeah.
A really, really big ingredient in Japanese cuisine.
Right, and this guy was like, this little boy loves his dashi, and I want to know exactly what is making it so wonderful. So, since he was a chemist, he took, I think, something like 12 kilograms of dashi and boiled it down.
8, 10 of them?
Isolated some stuff. The first thing that came out were some obvious ones that he clearly discarded is not responsible for umami because there were salts. He's like, no, it's not that. It's not salt. We understand salt. It's not salt. I know for a fact it's not salt. What else is in here? He starts sorting through it, right?
Well, didn't he separate the dashi into its parts and then break those down?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I jumped ahead a step.
Gotcha.
I would make a terrible chemist.
He's on kelp at this point, one of the ingredients.
Okay.
And so with the kelp is where he found those two salts. And you're right. He was like, well, I know these flavors and they're not what I've been experiencing on my tongue.
No, they're old news.
Old news.
So he looked a little further and he found, well, wait a minute. What is this? It's glutamic acid.
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe, but glutamic acid has a sour taste. And that's weird. Like it can't be glutamic acid. It doesn't quite make sense. So he added some more stuff. Came up with a chemical reaction, and what popped out on the other end is what you and I call monosodium glutamate.
MSG.
And he figured out that it's not glutamic acid, it's not the salts, but it's actually glutamate. But then he figured out even further, he's like, glutamate, that doesn't make any sense. Like, glutamate, doesn't work. Then he realized it's not the protein that's giving it the taste, it's the amino acids that actually make up proteins that give umami its taste.
Boom.
So glutamate, I'm sorry, is an amino acid, right?
Right.
Right. And that's one of the things that gives umami its taste. It was the first thing that was discovered to give umami its taste.
Yeah, and that was the kelp. So, you know, dashi has its different components. So he had a student who said, you know what, let me get the dried tuna flakes.
Mm-hmm. Bonito flakes.
Yeah, bonito.
Well, delicious.
There's different kinds, but bonito's definitely one of them. And he says, let me identify these components. And what he found was something called, you want to try that one? Inosinate? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that is right, man. It's a nucleic acid, like you say.
Yes. So he's like, boom, I've got number two. And then in 1960, another scientist named Akira Kuninaka.
Nice.
He worked for Yamasa, the famous soy saucier.
And now you're just showing off.
He was. And he went on to work in pharmaceuticals. It was interesting.
Oh, he's a chemist.
Yeah, but it's like you work for soy sauce and then you go to work for a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
I'm good at both things. But you're right. It's all just chemistry.
Sure.
So he said, you know what? I can identify a third, thing called guanylate. It's another nucleotide in those shiitake mushrooms you were talking about.
Yeah. And it's not like just bonito flakes, kombu, and shiitake mushrooms are the only things that produce umami taste.
Yeah.
These are just the three things that those guys went to town and isolated different stuff out of, right?
Yeah, I always want to see Bonita Applebaum when you say Bonita. Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah.
After all these years.
They keep making appearances in episodes lately.
Oh, yeah, they have been, huh?
You mentioned them in Hula Hoops?
Yeah.
This one? You can't remember which one we talked about, the scenario?
Oh, what's the scenario?
Right.
You know what? My friend Justin, whom you also know, his mother actually left her wallet in El Segundo.
No way.
And he even called me. He was like, dude, guess what happened? My mother left her wallet in El Segundo.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable.
We should probably take a break.
Yeah, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the science of taste right after this.
Yes. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get.
I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So we have done an episode on taste that was great.
It was great.
It's called Taste and How It Works from July 2010.
Right.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But we're going to go over it a little bit more here.
Well, yeah, I think if we're going to talk about umami, we'd be big jerks if we just assumed you know everything there is to know about taste.
Yeah, we got to talk about what's called the gustatory system.
Okay, so when we're talking about taste specifically, that's separate from flavor, which we'll get to. But taste begins on the tongue,
sure.
Right? And on the tongue, you're going to find what we like to call taste buds, or papillae. The papillae have taste buds on them, right?
Yes, there are three main types of papillae. You have the fungiform,
yes,
mushroom-shaped.
Sure.
The foliate, those are the ridges and grooves at the back of the tongue.
Okay.
And the circumvallate, and those are circular at the front end of the tongue.
Right. And then some papillae have a couple of taste buds. Some have hundreds of taste buds. And then when you look into the taste buds themselves, they have receptor cells. And what's interesting is when you think about a taste bud, you'd be like, oh, well, there's a salty taste bud, sweet taste bud, umami, sweet, sour, bitter.
Fat.
Right?
Carbon dioxide.
So that's not the case.
No.
As a matter of fact, a taste bud has different receptor cells, and these different receptor cells can be tuned to accept or sense different types of taste.
Yeah, wasn't it the shape, if I remember correctly?
That was with smell.
Oh.
But smell and taste are closely related.
Right.
And we should say that's a spoiler alert for the taste episode. We're not 100% sure how we sense taste.
Yeah.
Or smell. But yes, the predominant theory is that a specific type of odorant or taste molecule will interact with a specific type of receptor. And when it does, the chemical in that molecule, that food molecule, unlocks that receptor. And by doing that, it's translated into an electrical impulse.
Boom. So you chew your food up. Gets spitty and saliva covered,
yep.
And it breaks it down, coats your tongue, and that's when that transduction, those electrical impulses are sent to the NST, the solitary tract of the brain. Sorry, the nucleus of the solitary tract of the brain.
Yeah.
That's where it all happens.
That's when it puts all these different tastes together and says, delicious, I like this.
Mm-hmm.
Or, more to the point, that's probably going to kill you, so stop eating that.
Yeah.
And like we said, taste is different than flavor. Taste is just one aspect of flavor. For a food item, or really anything, to have a flavor, it includes not just the taste, but also the smell,
mm-hmm.
the sight of it, the temperature of it,
yeah.
how it feels.
Texture.
Is it firm? Is it a little too gelatinous? These are all things that your brain takes into account. Including things like memories that you form from having it before.
Yeah, cotton candy when I was a kid gives me great memories.
Yeah.
So that plays a part in flavor.
Exactly. Like you can, like it releases some different aspect of it that only you can experience that flavor.
Yeah, like if you had a cotton candy jelly bean, it would conjure up that memory and that would be part of the flavor.
Right.
Experience.
Yeah.
Or if it's one of your past lives.
So that's kind of the science of taste. And with umami specifically, again, one of the things that the West was having trouble with accepting that umami was a real thing was that there wasn't any what's called psychophysical evidence that umami was its own taste.
That's right.
For a long time, they thought it was just a component of salty taste because monosodium glutamate is a type of salt, right?
Yeah.
It's a salt protein combination that makes MSG. And for many, many years, this was the only, this is the only source of umami taste. But finally, in the 80s, once they had the first international symposium on umami, it was a real thing.
I bet that was a party.
I'll bet it was too, because it was in Hawaii.
Sure.
And the Japanese and Americans love Hawaii. So I'll bet everybody was partying down there. They started to do studies in the early 80s and they found, oh, actually, no, there are specific receptor cells on the human tongue. And it turns out, not just in human tongues, but mostly human tongues, that are designed or geared toward accepting or sensing umami tastes.
That's right. Those are the G-protein coupled receptors, GPCRs. And that is for sweet, bitter, and umami. And sour and salty, those are a little different. Those sort of flow through ion channels, which is way over my head, to be honest.
Well, it's just like if a molecule has a positive charge or a negative charge. If it's a positive ion, it has a positive charge, it's not going to make it through all sorts of the channels. It's only going to make it through positive channels. It's simple.
I know, but as far as relating that to a taste, it just sort of, all I can think of is mayonnaise.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like you said, it's like your brain just turns to mayonnaise.
Yeah.
It's transduction. It's taking a chemical and turning it into an electrical charge.
Yeah.
I just think that's endlessly fascinating.
Oh, sure. The senses and how they work. It's amazing.
But not just that. Electricity and electrical generation. Like, remember that episode?
Oh,
electricity?
Yeah.
Maybe one of our best, if you ask me.
Agreed. All right, so what we have here are three kinds of receptor cells that they know are that respond to this combination that makes up what MSG is. I'm sorry, what umami is. It's that inosinate, the guanylate, and the MSG. And what they think is that they actually hold on to these compounds, hold on longer, which is why you get these interesting combinations when you have, like, cheese with an apple, or cheese on an apple pie.
Right. It takes sweet and, like, doesn't just make it sweeter, it makes it, like, sweet in a different way, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing again, when you mix together different types of either amino acids or nucleic acids that create an umami taste, they magnify this umaminess of this meatiness of the whole thing.
Mm.
And also with, I believe, salty too.
Yeah.
Umami and salty mixed together. The fact that it hangs on to that molecule longer,
yeah,
and it just leaves that charge going, then that sweet can come and go, but it's affected by it.
Food science is so interesting.
It is, and we're going to talk a little more about food science and evolution right after this. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, so here's one thing I didn't get, and I reread this a few times. I get the first part of this, which is as follows, is that people have long thought that tastes had a part in evolution and that we were just wired to know that if you, something sweet is probably okay to eat and that will give us nutrition,
right.
Something really bitter may be dangerous to eat that might be poisonous. And of course, there's exceptions to all of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are pretty good general rules when it comes to evolution.
Right, that was the evolution explanation for the sense of taste, right?
Yeah, but what I don't get in, is where in here does it explain the evolutionary method of umami, like what role it played?
I got this. You ready?
Well, is it this part about cooking?
Yes.
Oh, it was very poorly stated.
It really was. But it's really interesting once you realize this. So you said that umami is like one of the newer tastes or something like that. It actually is.
Yeah, they couldn't figure out, like, what part did this have in evolution.
No, but even before that, like, if you look at it evolutionarily speaking, it's actually very old. Supposedly, the receptors are very old, like 400 million years old or something like that. But the idea that we can taste umami or us tasting umami is fairly recent because umami is released by cooking food.
Yeah.
Like if you eat a bunch of raw hamburger, that's not going to be umami tasting. It's not going to taste very good. But you cook that hamburger and you have molecularly changed its composition. You've unlocked some of the proteins into its constituent amino acids. And all of a sudden, you've got an umami taste.
Yeah, it's like caramelizing an onion is completely different than the taste of a raw onion or even a just regular grilled onion.
Yeah. And the big mystery of all this, evolutionarily speaking, is that what you're gaining, or one of the biggest sources of umami taste, is glutamate. Well, that's great, but the human body produces tons of glutamate, so it wouldn't make sense that we would have a taste receptor to find it in nature.
Right.
Because we got enough in our body. Well, you need other essential amino acids, and it figures that the best way to get amino acids is to cook or ferment food.
Yeah, you need fire.
Because amino acids can be bound to proteins.
Yeah.
And we don't absorb them as well, or our body spends a lot more energy breaking them down and digesting them than if we cook them or if we ferment them.
So man invents fire, man starts to cook food, man advances more rapidly.
Yes, that's one of the ideas that why our brain it developed as well as it did, or we became as intelligent as we did, was from cooking food. So we were able to break down our food a lot more easily and gain from it, absorb it, and basically grow huge brains.
That's awesome.
That it came from cooking. And where did we get umami taste? From cooked or fermented food, where these proteins have been broken down into much more easily absorbed amino acid constituents.
Man, I like that. I agree.
I feel like I just made it confusing, though. Did it come across?
No, it's totally makes sense. We learn how to cook food, and that put us at the head of the evolutionary ladder.
Right. And umami taste comes from cooked or fermented food.
Yeah. Very clear. What is not clear, or maybe it is clear, is MSG bad for you? A lot of people say it makes me dizzy, or it makes my heart flutter, or right. You know, the MSG crash after you go to the Chinese food buffet.
Well, there's actually something called Chinese food syndrome.
Yeah.
Not true. Apparently it's a myth. Supposedly,
yeah,
it's a
supposedly
culturally bound syndrome where like very few other cultures outside of the United States or the West even think of the idea that MSG can make you sick.
Yeah.
And that it's apparently a psychosomatic reaction where you expect MSG is going to make you sick, so you get sick.
Yep, that's one explanation. Maybe your body or our bodies are just different in how we process and metabolize MSG.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you have OD'd a little bit. Too much of anything can be a bad thing.
Right.
Could be all these things. But what science is saying is, there is no evidence that MSG is bad for you, quote unquote.
Right. And apparently study after study found that people, that MSG doesn't cause these things.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So get off the couch, lazy. You're just looking for an excuse to not cut the grass.
And so MSG, again, it has kind of a bad, it has kind of a bad rap here in the U.S., but it's everywhere. And it was actually one of the first things that,
Akita?
Yeah, Professor Akita did, was he figured out a way to patent extracting monosodium glutamate from wheat, which is where it's found much more abundantly than in, like, kelp.
And package it into a seasoning. And he had no ill will. He's like, this is great. This can make that boring dish, like, taste better.
Right.
That healthy, boring dish tastes better.
Exactly.
So it's not, it's ironic then that people think it's bad for you. And in fact, when he packaged it, he was like, this is going to be good for you.
Yeah. It's going to make this thing that's good for you taste even better. And our country is going to be very healthy, right?
Yeah, but it's hard to find. You said it was in everything, but it's disguised in ingredients.
Right. Yeah, again.
Pretty stealthily.
Because MSG has a bad rap here in the West.
Yeah, they should just put MSG.
Right. They do sometimes. For the most part, though, they will call it something like hydrolyzed wheat protein.
Yeah.
Because remember, it can be extracted from wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll call it just natural flavors.
Yeah, because all these things are natural.
Exactly.
What else? Texturized vegetable protein.
Yeah.
Autolyzed yeast extract.
Right.
Yeah, or just natural flavor. So if you see that, that can be a lot of things, though.
But just natural flavors?
Sure.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're eating.
No. But there are some upsides to using this MSG. It actually can be used in the way that Professor Akita envisioned it, which is taking stuff and making it slightly healthier, actually.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, when you use certain, like a potassium chloride rather than sodium chloride to make MSG, you can actually replace the sodium in a dish. So if you have a sodium problem, you can use some of this stuff.
Yeah, or hey, how about that low-fat food that didn't taste so good? Add a little MSG. It tastes better.
Right. Although recent medical research suggests that you should be not eating low-fat food, that regular fat food is not bad for you.
Or hey, old person, you don't taste so good anymore. And you take medication that even dampens that.
Right.
Why don't you throw some MSG on there?
Why don't you, old
bring
person?
Bring those taste buds back to life.
Right.
You know?
Yes. So, Chuck, whether MSG is a bad rap or not, it's definitely all over the place. And it is making things taste good, in my opinion.
Umami's here to stay.
It is. But there's other ways to get an umami flavor out of food. And this article actually has some helpful tips for your cooking if you want to go and cook and get an umami taste.
You ever been to Umami Burger?
No, I haven't. It sounds awesome.
It's good. I like it.
It sounds like
in LA.
You can make one at home with some mushrooms.
Yeah, Umami Burger is a chain. I don't know where they have them, but I had it in Los Angeles, and they add powdered mushroom and seaweed to the beef with a little soy sauce. You don't even know what you're eating except that it tastes good.
Right.
You know, you're not like, I could detect the mushroom and seaweed in this burger.
Right. It's just umami flavored.
Umami.
And you know what's interesting? There's this, I think it's called like umamiinformation.com or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting site. But they point out that while you associate umami with Asian cooking, it's actually found all over the world.
Sure.
Like in Italy with tomato sauces.
Yeah.
And ketchup in the United States, in cheeses in Europe, in West Africa, they have something called, what is it called? Sambara, I think. It's kind of like a miso in West Africa. That sounds kind of delicious.
Yeah.
Sambala.
That sounds good. I just like the sounds of it.
Exactly. So it's interesting that like people have been cooking with umami stuff long before we ever knew the word umami. And it's been around the world too.
Caramelizing onions we mentioned in like butter.
Right.
There's nothing better. What else?
You can put Parmesan cheese rinds into a soup or a stew and it'll umami that thing up.
Ooh, that's a good one.
If
you're making a stock, use bones of an animal.
And supposedly,
if you're not against that kind of thing.
The guy who invented veal stock is reputed to have believed that there was a fifth taste that had yet been unidentified back in the 19th century.
He's like, I've just boiled this calf.
He's like,
and I'm onto something.
There's something going on here besides the big four.
Wow.
Nobody believed him.
If you're cooking with mushrooms, and I recommend this with all vegetables, so roast those things a little bit first. It brings out all kinds of flavors.
And it makes your brain bigger.
Like if you go to make an omelet, don't just throw raw peppers and stuff in there. Mm-hmm. Cook that stuff up a little bit on the side, then add that to the egg mixture. It makes the world of difference.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm big on my omelets.
Everybody should watch Internet Roundup just to get an idea of what, like, our little gesticulations are. Like, when you're talking about, like, cooking peppers on the side and throw them in there, like, just you're making very cute little hand gestures over there.
Well, I always joke with Emily that I'm going to open an omelet stand on the beach one day. It's my retirement job. Nice. She's like, why an omelet stand on the beach? I was like, because no one's ever done it.
No, they really haven't.
You ever go to the beach? You're laying there in the hot sun? You're like, I could use an omelet?
Yeah. Every time.
I think I just want my retirement job to be very slow-paced and not busy.
Right.
That's what I figured
And
out.
You'll get to eat omelets.
You got anything else?
No. Cooking with wine is a good one, too.
Yeah, that's umami city.
No, just go forth and try umamiing up your dishes, and you will be happy. You will be happy, us.
It'll be an indefinable quality, but you'll know it's umami.
Yes.
Should be something about it. Can't put my finger on it.
You'll say this stuff is umai, which again means delicious roughly in Japanese.
Umai.
If you want to know more about umami, you can type that word in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said umami, it's time again for listener mail.
I'm just going to call this a nice, simple thank you from a listener.
Those are nice.
Sometimes it is nice, you know?
Yeah.
It's from Meredith from Granite Falls, Minnesota, and she's just thanking us because she has a boring summer job. She said, I work at a hospital and I scan a bunch of old files into an external hard drive. So what I do is I remove a lot of staples, stare at the scanner, and I wait for it to be done over and over.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine that it's like, oh, we need to digitize all these records. Let's hire someone to do that.
We're job creators.
Yeah, so God bless you, Meredith, for doing that. I found listening to 8 hours of music just wasn't doing the trick anymore. Then I discovered the wonderful world of podcasts, and you guys are my all-time faves. You guys are so funny, and I love all the dumb jokes you make.
I don't know if they're dumb. I think, like, groundbreaking is a better word.
Yeah? They really make my day, guys. And even if I don't understand all the tangents you go off on, because I'm only 21 and don't understand most of these references you make to movies or pop culture things from decades gone by, I still enjoy that the podcast is more of a conversation between you guys than just strictly reading from a script.
Oh, yeah, we don't even have a script.
Clearly, that would be the worst script ever.
It would be.
One of these days, I'll have a real story to share directly related to a recent show, but for now, I just want to say thank you so much and keep up the amazing work. That is best wishes from Meredith.
Meredith, thank you.
And she has a postscript that says, I absolutely love it when Josh calls Chuckers. Don't even know why. It just makes me smile every time.
Nice.
And then it just has a ring. Chuckers. It's a fun word.
It is. It's like umami.
Boy, we said umami a lot.
I wonder how many times.
I don't know. We should have an umami counter on the website.
Yeah, we should.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool. I don't know if we are familiar with the technology that could do that, though.
And at the end, it just turns into a big pile of salty, dried fish guts.
I seriously am making some top-notch miso soup. I've been inspired to.
Oh, you're going to make it from your own stock and everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
I've gotten pretty good at hot and sour soup.
Yeah?
But I make it from a mix and just add some stuff to it. This I'm going to make from, like, dashi and miso.
From scratch?
Well, I'm not going to, like, ferment the soybeans or anything like that.
Are you going to make your own dashi?
No, I'm going to buy dashi.
You should make your own dashi.
I'm not going to make my own dashi. Do you know how bad my apartment would smell if I, like, fermented and then boiled down fish just to make the stock? Are you crazy?
You need a spice kitchen.
I do need a spice kitchen now that you mention it.
Yeah.
No, but I will let you know how the miso soup turns out.
All right.
Okay. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.